Good afternoon, everyone. This is Andy Martinez for Hawk Sports Radio. I'm joined here by my co-host, Andrew McCulloch, producer T.C. Pearsall. Andrew, your Cubs are doing quite okay. A good start for the postseason.
Yeah, it's been exciting as a Cub fan to see the success. However, it's not done until it's done, so we just got to get the job done. You know, this weekend, it was a good weekend for fall break. A lot of students going home. I was a little disappointed in the attendance for QU Athletics. This football game especially, there weren't really a lot of people there, and we're going to talk about the football game today as well as men and women's soccer, but we are going to get things started with what happened at the Rock Pile. The Hawks, they get out to a nice start in the first half, take a 21-7 lead, and then get outscored 17-0 in the second half, and William Jewell takes it on a last-second field goal, 24-21, a pretty disappointing loss, Andy, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it sounded, I mean, obviously you were there. I was not at the game on Saturday.
Right.
It sounded like the whole first half was all QU.
It was.
And I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's something William Jewell did. I don't know if it's something William Jewell's coach said. Something clicked for them. And, you know, I scored him 17-0 in the second half. Last second field goal to win. A walk-off win, so to say. Last second, obviously. That's a backbreaker loss for QU. That's a season-defining loss, even though it is only halfway through the season.
Yeah, this is a game that was and should have been winnable for the Hawks. Going up not just 21-7, they're up 14-0 pretty quick in the first quarter. You know, things are rolling for the Hawks offense. You know, it was moving along nicely, and then it just got really stagnant in the second half. They couldn't get any first downs. They had a lot of chances. It wasn't as if William Jewell just came out and dominated the half. Both teams had their chances. Both teams, you know, they were having to punt the ball away sometimes, but William Jewell just ended up getting it done a little more. You know, their offense was able to click, as you said, in the second half, and QU's just they were silent in the second half. I would almost say more so that QU lost this game than did William Jewell just come back. I mean, their coach might have gave him some rallying words for the second half, but the Hawks, they look dead out there in the second half.
Yeah, and you know, even if all you look at is the stats or you know you read some of the clips from wherever, it's exactly what it was a tale of two halves, and sometimes that phrase gets thrown around a lot and it becomes very very cliche. But this is pretty much the definition of a tale of two halves, because the first half was all QU. QU was doing everything. You know, they go up 21-7, and they look to be cruising to a win. We said they could win by, you know, a possession or two, and it looked like we were going to be right, and we were going to be spot on, and they were going to score a lot of points, because QU just looked like they were just dominating from every single facet. I don't know what happened in the second half. I don't know if QU started calling a couple plays differently in situations that they were calling different in the first half, or if William Jewell, you know, changed up their assignments on defense. Any one of those things could have happened, but it's frustrating for any QU fan to see, you know, a win, like a game like this that you knew you could win and you had to win. A team that was 1-4 and 1-2 in the GOVC, a team that had lost to the St. Joe's pretty handedly, and you can't beat them. That's rough for QU.
Yeah, and what kind of grinds my gears is it's a home loss. This is a game you got to win at home against a team in William Jewell that came in 1-4 on the season. And to kind of go off your point there, maybe I think more so in the second half, William Jewell was able to make those adjustments defensively to stop the Hawks, mm-hmm. and the Hawks were never able to readjust
yep.
from their William Jewell's adjustments on defense in the second half. They were trying to play the same way they played in the first half, and obviously things weren't working out. William Jewell was able to stop the Hawks' defense. Chris Harris wasn't solid in the second half. He was running the ball better in the first half. The Hawks' running game in general was really better towards the second or the first half. You know, and Lonergan, he was okay. I mean, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, just above a 50% completion rating. It wasn't his best. The defense got to him a lot more for William Jewell. Their defensive line was able to get to him more. The Hawks' defense didn't get to the quarterback enough in the second half, and that just kind of allowed that 17-point swing that you saw in the second half. And that's pretty much a big reason why William Jewell came out victorious in this game. And, you know, their ability to drive that two-minute offense in the fourth quarter to get that last-second field goal, I thought, honestly, this game was going to overtime. I thought the Hawks defense was going to rise up to the challenge and stop William Jewell, but they were not able to do so and came back to haunt him.
Yeah, Nick Lonergan, by no means was it a horrible day for
no.
him.
No.
13, yeah, I think you talked about
just so average. 13,
24, 238, two touchdowns, an interception. But it, even though it wasn't the an ugly game, it was probably his worst game of the season. Which as a positive, if you want to say, if this is going to be how bad he is going to be, how if this is the worst he's going to be all season, you'll take that any day of the week and twice on Sunday because he still puts you in a position to win. But, you know, when you see him doing what he was doing the previous weeks, you wonder, man, if he was almost at that level, if he was at that level or almost at that level, you wonder, could things have turned out differently? Could QU have won by a touchdown or two? And it's, you kind of start playing the what-if game. If Nick Lonergan had thrown for 300 yards and three touchdowns instead of just the 238 yards. And it becomes a question of, you know, was it play calling? Was it the offense? Was it the defense? It's any number one of, or any one of a number of things. But, you know, if Nick Lonergan can't start doing a lot of things that he want, that he can do on offense, then you're not going to be able to be balanced and be able to have a good offensive scheme to win ball games.
Yeah, I mean, you can always play the what if game in football. I mean, pretty much from any perspective, even on the defensive side of the ball. Oh man, what if we would have stopped them here on 3rd and 3? What would, you know, we would have forced them to punt. They wouldn't have got the first down. They wouldn't have scored. Or, you know, maybe if this guy would have caught the ball on that 3rd down or on that, you know, on that big play that we could have had, maybe things would have been different for us. You know, it's, for me, I don't really like going to the what if game. I know a lot of that. I mean, a lot of people do it, and a lot of athletes will do it too. Like, oh, you know, you guys, what if we would have done this? What if we would have done that? When I look at this game, I just look at execution. And honestly, QU just, they didn't execute, especially on 3rd downs. I think I saw three for 11 on 3rd down conversions. You know, and I think, man, I think they were only in the red zone maybe one or two times. I don't know if you quote me on that, but and I know William Jewell for a fact converted more on 3rd down. I think they were around like 60% ish. I think 7 of 13 it said on there.
Yeah,
but
and QU was in the red zone once.
Yeah,
this game.
Yeah, so I mean, 3 for 3 for William Jewell in red zone scores. I mean, QU goes 1 for 1, but when you're only in the red zone one time,
you're not going to win many ball games.
Yeah, you can't even expect to score 21 points when you're only in the.
Yeah,
I mean, those two touchdowns that we had, besides that being in the red zone, were big pass plays to Eric Poindexter, who continues to be one of the lone bright spots for this Hawks team.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to. You know, I'd be surprised if he isn't first team LGOEC, and I would be shocked as to who takes his place on that team because he. At least from what we've seen, I think he's the best wide receiver in the GLC, or at least close to the top.
I mean, it's hard for me to disagree with that. He keeps up what he's doing right now. He keeps up with this production. You can't not put him in first team all GLC.
You might even be arguing All-American because he's just that good.
And he's getting over 100 yards a game. He's getting multiple touchdowns a game. I mean, he seems to be our only threat. And going into this game, we talked about what if they double team him? What if they do this? What if they do that? Well, teams are not being it. They're not stopping him. They're not stopping him no matter what.
And you wonder why, you know, should you try exploiting him like we talked about? Do you start running a little in reverse? Do you start running a wildcat with him at quarterback? Do you start doing things to get him the ball quicker than just a pass or a deep pass play? Because he can do a lot of things with the ball. And he's when he gets the ball, he's electrifying. He's fun. You know, you just watch him on punt returns, kick returns. He can take – anytime he touches the ball, he can take the ball to the house. And there's very few players at any level of football that can do that. And when you have it, you kind of start wondering, should you be exploiting this weapon more?
Yeah, I mean, you got it highlighted right there. Hawks, 272 yards of total offense in the first half, and they only managed 95 yards in the second half. And they didn't get past the Cardinals' 45-yard line on their final three drives. So, like I said, offense was stagnant, just bad. No excuses. I mean, and Padgett, he doesn't go with excuses. I think he will fully admit that his team got outplayed in the second half, and his team didn't deserve to win because the other, you know, William Jewell just brought it more than QU did.
If you look at it by one half, there was only one team that deserved to win, and that was clearly QU. But if you look at it as a whole, I find it hard to argue that QU deserved to win because they didn't show up for a whole half. They didn't do anything that you would argue to say they deserved to win because that second half was just about as poor of a second half as you can get. And you know, if you play like this against Indianapolis, Ohio, Dominican, Truman State, some of the top teams in the GLVC or that you have on your schedule, that's understandable because, you know, those are tough teams and that's going to happen. And teams are going to be able to, good teams are going to be able to adjust to what you're doing offensively. When you do it to William Jewell, who's at the bottom of the league, had only won one game going into this season or going into this game, you know, that's where it's really rough for me and for me to rationale or to have rationale that, you know, that QU is, you know, better than what we see on the field.
Yeah. And I think because William Jewell, like you said, is towards the bottom of the GLVC, I think this second half that QU played was well worse than the second half they played against Southwest Baptist when they got blown out of the water. You can make the case because Southwest Baptist is a better team and because QU was on the road in that game. This is a game that QU's at home. They're up 21-7 into halftime. You got to stomp that foot. You got to stomp your foot on that gas pedal and you just keep rolling in the second half.
Yeah,
you ride in the momentum. The crowd's into it. The crowd's loving it. I mean, the crowd was... Albeit there weren't a lot of people there, they were still a good crowd. They were loud. Yep. They were supportive of the Hawks. And it was deathly quiet at the Rock Pile in the second half because fans were like, oh, boy, William Jules brought it, and where did QU go? I mean, QU, they didn't have it on offense.
Yeah, QU was just – it wasn't the QU team we've seen at home the last two games because – you know, the last game against St. Joe's, the last home game against St. Joe's the week before, they come up and get – the defense comes up and gets a big stop at the end of the game when they need it. This time, QU can't do it. You know, there's – we've seen them at home. They have that extra chip or they have that extra gear that they find when in late situations. Even against Lincoln, they had the onside kick that they had at the end, and then they were able to, you know, stop and stop Lincoln from coming back. Against St. Joe's, you know, they had that extra drive. Against William Jewell, they didn't have anything that was able to remotely stop them in the second half. I don't know what it was missing or if something was missing. They just weren't the QU team that we've seen the previous two home games.
Yeah, you're right. You've got the drives pulled up right here on our lovely computer. And I mean, we're just going to look at this here. QU starting in the second half or in the second quarter, I see punt. A touchdown. That was the last touchdown they scored. And then into the second half, interception, punt, punt, punt. Four possessions in the second half, and they all either end in a punt or a turnover. So, I mean, for me, this is not on the defense. This is definitely on the offense. Most of the losses we've been talking about have been on the defense, but the offense didn't show up. And that's, to me, that's more concerning than the defense not showing up. We expect the defense not to play that well. And these last two games,
these have been the two best games the defense has played.
Absolutely, allowing 16 against St. Joe's and now just 24 against William Jewell. They've been good. Granted, they couldn't make the stop at the end of the game to get it into overtime, but it doesn't matter. They shouldn't have even been in that position because the offense should have been able to tack on more points in the second half. And honestly, Lonergan's interception was a big... I think it was a big momentum change in the game. QU was still leading at that point. William Jewell gets that turnover in QU territory, and they're able to score off of Lonergan's interception. So, I mean, you could look at that as a big game changer. But, yeah, all in all, just a really disappointing game for the Hawks. There's nothing really left for me to say other than the fact that Padgett's got to be really concerned. And like you, I think that you know, things might just be going downhill from here. I mean, we got a road game coming up here. We're going to play up against tough competition, and the Hawks are in for just a big challenge.
Yeah, no rest for the weary. You get Indy next week. I can't see QU winning that game against Indy. And then you got Ohio Dominican coming in here, who is preseason ranked number 4 in the nation. That's going to be another tough one for the Hawks. Yeah, at that point, you're looking at being 2-5 on the season. With three games to go, it would be hard for QU to take anything from that. You'd have to win all three games in order to just finish 500, which that's not really an improvement from last season. You're basically staying stagnant from what you did last season. Actually, you're taking a step back because you were 6-5 last year. That's right. So you would be taking a step back. And those three games are against Truman State, McKendree, and Missouri S&T. If you look at the GOVC schedule, McKendree's 2-1, 4-1 overall, second place in the GOVC. Truman State is 2-2, 2-4, roughly in the same boat that QU's in. Then you look at Missouri S&T. Missouri S&T is 2-1 in the conference, 2-3 overall. Those three games aren't guaranteed wins. And I don't think, based on what we saw this week, I don't think you can say that they can win any of those remaining five games left on the schedule. It's rough to say, but you know that might be a possibility where these two wins are all they have for the rest of the season, maybe.
Maybe. I think they could probably at least pull one or two wins out in the five remaining games. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. When is it ever for this team?
Yeah.
They make everything a lot harder than it should be. One positive though, Chris Harris, you know, he did look a little healthier. He did have over 100 yards on the ground. Him and Poindexter were there on Saturday. Lonergan, you know, he had a lot of pressure on him. The offensive line didn't do that great of a job. Obviously, they got to play a complete game on offense, though, for QU to have a chance in any of these next five games.
Yeah, I think we're close to jumping completely off the bandwagon, or at least the whatever you want to call it in terms of the football team.
Entertain the idea, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the men's soccer team is another team that we're getting to that point. 8-3-1 overall, and they split this weekend, falling at Drury 3-2, and then coming back and beating Missouri S&T 2-1. This is a weird team, not in terms of, you know, they're weird guys or anything, but in terms of you don't know what you're going to get from them game in and game out. Not just week in and week out. It's you don't know if this game against a really bad team, they're going to go out and beat them 8-0 or if they're going to lose to them 1-0. This is a team that's really hard to kind of understand. We're more than halfway through the season.
Very much. We're getting towards the end of the year.
Five games left in the year. You really don't know how to, you know, define this team, I guess is the right word to say.
You're absolutely right. This men's soccer team is like going out and predicting how Jay Cutler is going to throw the football on Sunday afternoons for the Chicago Bears. I don't think I've predicted a single weekend correct with this team.
I don't think any of us have. Yeah, I don't think we have.
I don't know. I think you might have said they're going to go 1-1, but I mean, I don't get it with this team. Giving up three goals. When's the last time they gave up three goals? I mean, they've probably done it this year too.
They did against Lindenwood,
obviously.
But,
I mean, you never saw that last year.
No,
I mean,
you never saw more than two goals.
What gives?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, obviously we knew they were a young team, inexperienced. We knew some of the faults coming into the season, graduating, you know, All-Americans and goal scorers, and you know, all these things that we knew that they were missing. But at the same time, you still looked at the team and said, you know, they've got piece A and piece B and piece C. They still might have some chances to do something, but the inconsistency and the, you know, lackadaisicalness of this team, that's something that you didn't expect to see at all this year.
No, I still expected this team to be very, very good, and you know, their record is very good. They've lost a couple of games. That's all right. I mean, it happens.
They're still second in the GLVC.
You're still a full game behind Rockers now in the standings and in the GLVC standings. You can still make a deep run into the GLVC, maybe win it. Who knows? It just depends if you're hot at the right time. I mean, yeah, we've got five games left to play. Two still more left on the road. Obviously, losing to Drury is no good, but it was a good bounce-back win 2 days later against Missouri S&T. That's a 2-1 victory there for the Hawks. You know, for me, it's always been about, can they limit chances for the other side? How is their defense going to play? Are they going to be able to, you know, make the stops? Goalkeeper Nate Griffin is going to be able to make those big saves. I mean, Drew Duncan had a lot of shutouts last year, and obviously that's because the Hawks were so sure-handed on the defensive side of the ball last year. For me, I've never really thought the offense was challenged or anything like that. No. I knew they put up goals. It's not a limited offense, but for me, the defense, you know, that's what rides on it for me, whether they're going to be successful or not.
Yeah, and what you saw about last year's team is when they were winning, whether they were scoring four goals, one goal, nine goals, they were pitching shutouts every single game. And now when they're winning, even if they are winning, they're winning 2-1. They're winning 3-2. They're winning 3-1. They're winning 3-2. Which, okay, you can look at it and say, we got wins, we got wins, we got wins. But you also give up goals, you give up goals, you give up goals. Which a team sees and says, hey, we can score on these guys. And if we can defend, then we've got a chance at winning. And that mindset gives teams a little extra chip in their shoulder, a little extra, you know, they have that extra step in them. And they can give QU a lot of fits, and it makes it difficult for QU when a team knows that all they have to do is defend and they might be able to steal a goal on this team. It makes it hard for QU to try and break down teams.
Last year, with QU rolling the way they were, teams were looking at their schedules and they were looking at QU and saying, I mean, QU had that fear factor. They had that. They had other teams thinking, well, we're playing QU, probably not going to win with the way they're playing this year. They don't have that this year with this young team. Yeah. They don't have that fear factor against opposing teams. What they do have, though, like I've said multiple times, is that target on their back.
Yep.
For what they did last year, a lot of these teams are looking at the Hawks and saying, well, you're not the same last year. This is our moment. You're not going to win it again like you did last year. You're not as talented. We know it, and we're going to come at you with our best stuff, and we're going to beat you. For the teams that actually did beat them, you know, they're right.
They're at least going to put up a fight.
Right. And they're not coming into the game thinking, oh, you know, we don't have a chance. We're playing QU. They're amazing. They're nearly perfect like they were last year. This year, not the case. Every single one of these teams is going in with that mindset. Hey, you know, we got a chance to win this game. And it's showing in the box score. It's showing just in the score itself, like you said, because you're seeing these 2-1 games, these 3-2 games, these games that the Hawks are just pulling out of their skin of their teeth. And it's not like last year when they'd be winning 5-0, 6-0, 3-0, shutting everybody out, and it would only take one or two goals, you know, for teams to just feel down about playing the Hawks again.
Yeah, last year what was scary about playing QU was, you knew you probably weren't going to win. And what made it worse is you probably weren't going to score on them, and you knew that going in because they weren't giving up goals. Well, now you know, we can score on them, and if we can score on them, if we play the rest of our game right, we have a chance of winning or at least getting a tie. And, you know, that's kind of bad for QU because then it becomes we don't have that, you know, fear instilled on the opponent. We have that belief instilled in them. And then that makes it harder for you because then you kind of start doubting, you know, things that you're doing. And you start wondering, well, you know, if they know they can score on us and they know that if we are attacked by the left side, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, if we're attacked by the left side, that's our weakness. Well, then you start overcompensating, you start worrying, and that's when the mistakes start happening. And, you know, that's something you didn't see in the Hawks last year that you're seeing a lot in the team this year.
If I had to draw any positives out of that, what I would say is that with the younger guys on this team, I think it's better if they experience a season like this than a season like last year. If your first season is a season as almost perfect as it was last year, you're not going to really go through any trials, any tribulations like you are this year. Mm-hmm. You're going through those growing pains this year, and that's only going to make you better going forward as an athlete, at least in my opinion. I mean, yeah, sure, it's nice to be on a team that wins almost every single game by a score of like 3-0 or 4-0, but you don't ever experience those losses, and that make you fight back even harder. Like this team, I feel like with these young guys this year, if they're not able to get to the mountaintop, they're only going to fight harder next year. To get back to the top of the GLVC, to win the GLVC. If they don't do it, I mean, I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm just saying if they don't do it, if they go through those, you know, trials and tribulations, then next year these younger guys, and there's a lot of them, are going to be even hungrier.
Quincy is second in the GLVC with a 7-2-1 record in conference, 8-3-1 overall. Rockers is in first. Indianapolis is in third. Drury is in fourth. Against those three teams, QU is 1-1-1. That kind of sums up their season as a whole. You don't know what you're gonna get from the Hawks. They can either play great against one of the top teams and win, they can play really bad and lose, or they can just be average and tie. Those three games just sum it up. And you can look at it, you can twist that around and say, well, you know, if we make it to the GLVC tournament, we know we can beat any of those three teams because all three of those games were close. On the contrary, though, you can also say, or the other team can say, well, it was close, so we can beat them too. So it just becomes a double-edged sword. But I think, you know, if QU can find an extra step in their game in these last five games, and you would hope you'd have it before the Truman State game because Truman State's probably one of the hottest teams in the conference right now, then you might be able to argue that this team has a chance of, you know, turning things around and making a run at least towards the NCAA tournament.
I think the team to watch right there on a four-game winning streak is Indianapolis. But you said hopefully they can find another gear. I'm going to even push it one step further. They have to find another gear in order to win. In these last five games, it's crucial. I mean, like you said, you got teams out there that are winning. You know, they're on winning streaks and they're playing really well. And if the Hawks go in there with any kind of, you know, stumbling and losing, you know, to Truman State or to anybody really for that matter, you know, they're not going to go in with as much confidence as these other teams.
Turning our attention to the women's soccer team, this is a team, I think I'm off the bandwagon. I think I'm off the belief that they could do anything special because I think that loss to Drury 2-1 They came back and beat Missouri S&T 3-1 on Sunday. I just think there's something about this team that I don't think they'll be able to be as good as we thought they would be even a week or two ago that we thought.
Yeah, it's a really disappointing loss. Actually, just a disappointing day in general for both teams. Men and women both losing to Drury. But for the women, it hurts even more. I mean, them and Drury now with the same records in the conference. It's not like Drury was a bad team or anything, but, you know, the Hawks, and like we talked about, those three ties.
Yeah.
Those three ties have killed them. I mean, 8-2-3 record. You know, even if you would have just won two of those games, you know, 10-2-1.
Yeah.
That just looks so much better. And coming into this four-game road trip, I figured they'd probably lose one of these games. I'm not going to lie. However, I figured it'd probably be against Bellarmine.
Yeah, who's not against top
Drury.
Of the conference.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought they could be going to Drury and win, but Bellarmine was always going to be tough, especially the way they're playing. Four-game winning streak, 9-0-1. I mean, I'm close. I'm not going to quite jump off the bandwagon yet. I want to see how they play these next couple games, if they're able to beat Bellarmine, and then if they're able to go in and beat Southern Indiana as well. But I'm not ready to jump off yet because I still think that this team is good. Are they as good as we thought? No, probably not. But I still think I'm not going to close the door on them just yet. Give me another week.
Yeah. I see. The only reason I don't want to be in the same boat as you are is because we've been saying that give me another week.
We have.
Every single week.
We have.
And there's 2.5 weeks left in the season. There's not so much give me another week left because you're at the end of the road. So that's why I'm saying, you know, if they haven't done it by now, to me at least, and this is just my opinion, they're not going
to
do it any.
You have every right to have that opinion. I mean, I should agree with you. My head agrees with you. But, I mean, obviously, I want them to have this, yep. You know, this great season. I mean, after they beat Grand Valley State, number one team, the first game of the year. I mean, we always talk about that. But, come on,
when they won their first three games by a combined score of 12-1.
Yeah.
You had every reason to believe that this was the best Quincy team that has probably been around since Dave Moose has been here in his 10 seasons. But, you know, just ever since then, they've been 5-2-3 overall. That's close to average, in my opinion. And those three ties are just killer. And we talked about it, you know, the NCAA or the national polls might not be giving them too much of a hard time because they beat Grand Valley State. Well, now that they've lost a couple of games, they've pushed them down. They're no longer ranked. Now will the regional rankings start taking notice of that? And that's where it's really important because that's what gets you into the NCAA tournament. And if they don't think you're good enough, your season's for naught, really.
Does this committee, do you think, do they focus more on the quality of the wins that a team has or the losses that they have or the ties, and for that matter? Because this team has lost they've lost to good teams, but they've tied bad teams,
yeah.
Teams that they should beat easily. But then they've got those wins, you know, that against those good teams, those better teams. And if suppose they were to beat Bellarmine and then they were to go on and win, do you think they'd have to win all of their games, or do you think they, you know, could?
I think if they beat Bellarmine, they put themselves right back in the mix. And if they beat Bellarmine, I'm right back on the bandwagon. I'm not scared to admit it. I'll be unless they lose to Southern Indiana, McKendree, and UIS in those next three games.
Yeah.
But if they beat Bellarmine, I think I'm right back in the bandwagon. But when you asked about the committee is weird in the sense of when QU men's soccer team 2 seasons ago, when they won the GLVC regular season, everyone thought they have to be in. They played good teams, but they were in the same boat that this QU women's team is in now. They had a lot of ties, and they didn't make it in, even though they were GLVC regular season champions.
Yep, I didn't know about that because my sister's boyfriend was on the team then, and I just remember how incredibly disappointed he was.
Yeah. And, you know, that team deserved every right to be in there. They made it to the GOC championship final. You start wondering, you know, if it was just looking at the whole region, QU deserves to be in just for the sole fact that they beat Grand Valley State and they haven't been awful. But the regional rankings and the committee doesn't look at it the same way we do. And that's why I don't think they might get in. And that's just based off the men's team 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, I mean, I will take your word for it because I'm not. You've covered this a lot longer than I have, and I think, you know, this women's team. I'm not going to jump off the bandwagon unless they do lose to Bellarmine. If they lose to Bellarmine, I'm off. So it'll be interesting to see that. And you know what? We're going to preview that game and everything else coming up for this week on our next show later this week. But for now, that's going to close out the recap here. Andy Martinez and Andrew McCulloch, your co-host with T.C. Pearsall, our producer. Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll see you later. Go Hawks!